Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
A rare move for tech workers. How's this? A union at Google, where the minimum wage is going up. Georgia on everyone's mind today. And on the show, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers and the United Steelworkers. Good afternoon and welcome to the Wednesday, January 6th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on various platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify. And when you get an opportunity, here's what you do. Just sign up, get our shows on a regular basis, and eventually give us a rating. We'd appreciate a five-star rating. We have two guests on the show today. Joe Walsh is going to be joining us. No, not the rock star. Joe is with IBEW Local 99 out of Rhode Island. He organized in the local union back in 1987, and since then, he held office in every administration. Technical instructor for 10 years at the training facility. He served as vice president, president, press secretary, organizer, assistant business manager, and business manager. And he's a master electrician. He's been a master electrician for 30 years. And talk about a rich history here. This local was founded on this week, actually January 8th, 1900. And in the early years of Local 99, they controlled 98% of the electrical work in Rhode Island. I don't know what it is today. I'm sure it's not 98%, but wow, what a time in American history. We're going to talk about how the local is doing. We'll talk about the outreach to young people to get involved in the trade, specifically Local 99, the value of union labor, the education of union labor. And there's a lot posted on their website. It's IBEW99.org. And we'll get into the benefits that the union has for contractors, for the customers, and lastly, for the workers themselves. You heard about the great benefits, and we'll run all those down. So Joe Walsh will be our first guest on the show. And our second guest is Dan Filippo. Dan is a District 1 director for the United Steelworkers, one of the many proud sponsors of this show. And he's got quite a territory. District 9 includes Tennessee, North and South Carolina, Florida, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, and the Virgin Islands. Yeah, that's a big chunk of territory. We're going to talk about what's going on in District 9. You know we're going to talk about the race in Georgia. We'll get into that in a minute. And like I said, he's going to be our second guest. A little background on Dan. He was elected by acclamation in November of 2009. As director of District 9, served as assistant to the director of the district until May of 09, when he was approved by the International Executive Board to succeed Stan Johnson, who was promoted to International Secretary Treasurer. He is a native of Mississippi, began his career in 1980 as a production worker for Conoco Chemicals, now Georgia Gulf Chemicals, in Aberdeen, Mississippi. He joined Local 15198, quickly became a union activist, took on a variety of assignments, including steward and grievance chair, before he was elected president of the local. That was in 1986, and he served three terms. After completing training at the AFL-CIO's Organizing Institute, Dan worked as a local union activist and organizing throughout local, or rather District 36, which actually was the predecessor to what we now have as District 9. Staff rep for Mississippi and Alabama, While he was doing that, he played a significant role in establishing the Mississippi Labor Management Conference and served on the conference board of directors. As sub-district director for Florida and Georgia, he was instrumental in integrating staff assignments following the merger in 2005 of the steelworkers with PACE. That's the chemical workers union. So he played a lot of roles, and one of the reasons we're bringing him on the show, obviously we'll talk about Georgia, but there's been a lot of organizing in the South. In right, all these states I just mentioned are all right-to-work states. Now, it's more difficult to organize in states like that, but that doesn't stop the labor movement. No. In fact, it's actually made them stronger in some regard. So we'll get into all of that as our second guest. And I noticed this on the National Steelworkers website. If you have a child that is thinking about going to college, obviously you think about the cost, right? Well, there are scholarships available through the Union Plus program. In fact, three steelworker families are winners this year. Union Plus recently awarded $300,000 in scholarships to 215 students representing 43 unions. And I just mentioned the three steelworkers families. There are two from Pennsylvania, one from Alabama. If you want to get some information on this, you have time, a couple of weeks here. The deadline is January 31st. Just go to this website, unionplus.org/scholarship. All right? unionplus.org/scholarship. Now, if you've been listening to the show for some duration, I've been doing this, my God, going into the 23rd year. We used to do regular segments with Union Plus, and we're going to try to line up someone from the organization to talk more about this. Hey, you know, these grants, I mean, I'm reading here. There's some that are $500. There's some that are $4,000. That'd be nice. That'd be real nice. You think about the cost of college today. You need all the help that you can get. So do check that out. Again, that's unionplus.org/scholarship. All right, let's start off with Georgia here, because that is the big story, and it's one that you're going to hear for quite some time. Democrat Raphael Warnock, the pastor of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s former church in Atlanta, defeated Republican Senator Kelly Loeffler in a hotly contested runoff election, making him the first Black American to represent Georgia in the Senate, and the first Democrat to do so since 2005. Isn't that something? Now, the Associated Press declared Mr. Warnock the winner, while another Senate runoff race in Georgia between Republican David Perdue and Democrat John Ossoff still is too close to call. Now, Ossoff has a lead. As we are recording the show, he's got a lead of about 16,000 votes, but not all the votes are in. I think it's like 98%, 99%. Now, as you know, we've been talking about this on the show for quite some time, the Democrats need to win both races to take control of the U.S. Senate for the first time since Republicans gained power in 2015. In an address to the public early this morning, Mr. Warnock said, "I'm going to the Senate to work for all of Georgia, all of Georgia." So right now, all eyes are on the state of Georgia, trying to figure out what's going to happen with control of the Senate. This is such an interesting scenario that's panning out. And many are saying that Trump did damage by going down there and challenging the election, saying your vote doesn't count. He's been claiming that because of the fraudulent votes, and this is what Trump is saying, Biden shouldn't be in the White House. So once again, we have one down and one to go in Georgia. All eyes on Georgia, no doubt about that. A group of Google engineers and other workers announced this week they have formed a union, creating a very rare foothold for the labor movement in the tech industry. Check this out. About 225 employees at Google and its parent company, Alphabet, are the first dues-paying members of what's called the Alphabet Workers Union. They represent a fraction of Alphabet's workforce, far short of the threshold needed to get formal recognition as a collective bargaining group in the country. But the new union, which will be affiliated with the Communication Workers of America, one of our sponsors here on the show, says it will serve as a, quote, structure that ensures Google workers can actively push for real changes at the company, end of quote. Its members say they want more of a voice, not just on wages, benefits, and protections against discrimination and harassment, but also broader ethical questions about how Google pursues its business ventures. The campaign is the latest signal from employees who don't believe the company is living up to its professed ideals, as expressed in its original "Don't Be Evil" slogan. I'll get to that in a minute. Google said on Monday that it tried to create a supportive and rewarding workplace, but suggested it won't be negotiating directly with the union. How many times have you heard that? Of course our employees have protected labor rights that we support, said a statement from the company. But as we've always done, we'll continue engaging directly with our employees. Now, unionization campaigns have not historically been able to gain much traction among elite tech workers. And you have to keep in mind, many of them are well paid, and they get a lot of perks like free food and shuttle rides to work. However, workplace activism at Google and other big tech firms has grown in recent years as employees call for better handling of sexual harassment and discrimination and avoiding harmful uses of products they are helping to build and sell. Many employees began seeing the power of their workplace activism 2 years ago, 2018, when an internal outcry led Google to abandon its work supplying the Pentagon and artificial intelligence services for conflict zones. Later in that year, thousands of Google employees walked out to protest how the company handled sexual misconduct allegations against executives. Google software engineer Chewy Shaw, who has been elected to the new union's executive council, said he and others decided to form the group after seeing colleagues pushed out of their roles for their activism. Shaw said, "We want to have a counterforce to protect workers who are speaking up." The latest examples came last month when prominent ethics researcher Timit Gebru said she was fired over a research paper that Google wanted to disassociate from. And as a federal labor agency filed a complaint accusing the company of spying on employees and then firing some of them during a 2019 effort to organize a union, Google has denied the allegations in the case, which is scheduled for a hearing this April. So this is one to watch, no doubt about that. By the way, we'll have a segment with Frank Matthews of the Communication Workers of America next Tuesday. I'm sure we'll get more information from Frank on this union drive at Google. And obviously, a lot of tech workers are watching that one. By the way, this year, 74 jurisdictions are expected to raise the minimum wage. This includes 24 states, 20 of which already raised the minimum wage January 1, and 50 municipalities. 40 of these jurisdictions will see minimum wages of $15 or more by the end of this year. And with these changes and more on the horizon, expectations indicate that 42% of U.S. workers will work in jurisdictions with $15 an hour minimum wage laws by the year 2026, so we're talking 5 years out. 42% of all workers. All right, we have to take a break. You're listening to America's Workforce. Coming up next, IBEW Local 99 out of Rhode Island. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Hey, we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook. That would be AWF Union Podcast. And follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the North Coast Area Labor Federation, part of the AFL-CIO. Let's go to line number one, and welcome to the show. Newcomer to the show. His name is Joe Walsh, and he's business manager of IBEW Local 99 out of Rhode Island. Joe Walsh, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us, and I got to ask you the first question here. How many people have teased you about your name? I mean, Joe Walsh, great rock star out of Cleveland, Ohio, I might add.
It's fairly common. You know, probably once a month somebody will ask me about my name, and I will usually respond with something to the effect of how bad the rock and roll business is nowadays, so I'm forced to be an electrician. So, and, you know, in the past, you know, people would make, you know, comments about the name, and it's a big joke, and I have actually worked with a Jim Morrison and a James Hendrix in the past also. So, you know, there's more of us out there than you would believe with the same names.
You're in good company. You're in real good company there. I love that.
I am.
All right, let's talk about your union history. I see you're a master electrician for, what, three decades? And when do you go back to the 80s? What got you interested in becoming an electrician? Let's just start there.
So my father is a IBEW member now. He is 80 years old now, but he started off when he got out of the Navy. So, you know, when I grew up, you know, your options were you go into the trades or you go into the trades. Really wasn't much shot of going to college or anything like that. That really wasn't an option. So I had applied to the union early on when I was about 18. I did not get accepted 19, 20, 21. Didn't get accepted on any of those times. It's a, you know, it's a very small population that obviously is picked every year. And, you know, there's always reasons why people get in and don't get in, and it is what it is. So I went out and I worked non-union for a number of years, got licensed in a couple of states, continued to apply to the union, and I came in through organizing actually in 1987 and started running some fairly substantial residential-type projects, condominium complexes and things like that. Took advantage of going back through the union school for a couple of years to complete my formal education that just wasn't offered in the non-union. And then, and that's it. The rest is history. I started running for office pretty much within a couple of years of topping out my apprenticeship. I've been the vice president. I've been the assistant business manager. I've been the press secretary. I was an instructor at the school for probably around a decade. I've been the president, and now I'm the business manager.
Is there anything that you haven't done at Local 99?
Not a whole lot. I think my major achievement that I can say is, you know, I mean, union administrations are, you know, not always on the same page from one to another as they go on. And I've actually held office in every administration that has been here since I joined. So, which
That's
and some
great.
Of them were radically different. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. How many members in 99?
So we run about 600 working members as far as men and women who are actually out in the field, you know, today. And then we have probably another 150 that are either, you know, contractors, project managers, estimators, things like that. And then we have another couple of hundred that work outside of the union, but in other unions for different facilities, you know, colleges and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's your territory? I mean, Rhode Island's not very big. Do you stretch beyond that state?
Yeah, so Rhode Island is, you know, as we know, the smallest state in the union, and that is, you know, obviously a source of pride for us. But it is a densely populated state. You know, we do have 1 million people who live here, so we have a lot of hospitals, a lot of colleges, and a lot of, you know, factories and other businesses to work. We do go outside of the state. We do control territory in Massachusetts of Attleboro, North Attleboro, and Seekonk, which are the towns, you know, basically right over the line in Massachusetts. That's about 10% of our territory up there. About 90% is Rhode Island.
I was reading about your history on your website, and it's IBEW99.org. Back in 1902, now you're only 2 years old back then. By the way, congratulations. This Friday, you're going to be, what, 121 years old?
We are. Buy me something nice.
Okay, just wait in the mail, okay? It might take some time.
Right.
But back in 1902, your local controlled 98% of the electrical work in the state of Rhode Island. That's amazing. That's quite an accomplishment. Well, now, I have to ask you, where are you today with that about?
So, presently, and really for over the past probably 3 or 4 decades, we've been in the high 20s or low 30s, you know, moving around from anywhere from 26 to 32%. There were some decisions made in you know, the late 60s, early 70s, across the board in the IBEW, as to, you know, people who were what were called white ticket hands or permit people or whatever you want to call them, which were basically they worked union, they get paid union, but they were never actually union members. So a decision was made back in that time frame to, you know, basically set those people free to go off and do whatever they wanted. And that immediately dropped the market share considerably, right? So at that point. So we've been working on that ever since. I mean, we're in every market there is, and we're growing. You know, I mean, here we are in a pandemic, and I'm at 110% employment in during a global pandemic. So we're... you know, we have no limitations on what we'll do here.
Well, that's pretty good. I mean, that density of 20 to 32%, pat yourself on the back in today's world. That's quite phenomenal. Joe, I want to talk to you. You started out non-union, as you indicated a few minutes ago, and then you got involved in the electrical workers. And I want you to speak to that part, because that had to be an eye-opener, game changer, or however you want to call it. I mean, it was probably a night and day difference there. Can you reflect on that? Because I just want our audience to hear, and I always call it the union difference. And we've seen the union difference all through America when we have, you know, jobs that are threatened because of this pandemic. I mean, look at the food and commercial workers, the union versus the non-union stores, the meat packers union and all that. But can you reflect on those days and the difference that pretty much you encountered back then?
Sure. So those days are really no different then than they are today. So when you work for, and I really typically refer to the non-union as the unrepresented, right? Because it makes them sound like they're against unions, which doesn't mean they're against unions. They just didn't have the same opportunities the rest of us had. So.
Yeah.
Basically, the difference between the union and the non-union, the significant difference is that you have a seat at the table, right, for everything that goes on. If you work in the open shop and your boss wants to decrease your pay or if he wants to, change any vacation or holiday schedules or whatever that may be, you literally have no voice in that unless you happen to work for a small shop that, you know, deeply respects you and they want to bring you in on the conversation. So here, you know, and this was told to me by an older gentleman when I first came in, and I had a conversation with him. Just, you know, you always want to verify that you've made a good decision, a right decision, because you hear things, right? You know, if you work in the union, yeah, you'll always be out of work. Well, I've worked every day since I got in. I've never missed a day, you know, and I was lucky, fortunate, the right place, the whole thing, but still that's it. But I asked this gentleman, I said, you know, what do you think about the difference between being union or non-union? He also had been non-union when he was younger. He says, the difference is your contract. He says, a contract doesn't lie. It's negotiated. That's it. That's what it says. You honor your contract in your direction, their direction. It says, but you're not going to come in tomorrow and find your pay got cut by 20%. You're not going to come in tomorrow and find out that vacation day or that holiday that you had, you no longer have. You're not going to find out that the health care that you had is not going to cover your wife's birth of your first child, things like that. And those words stuck with me my whole life. And when I became the organizer here, which I think I left that one out of my my resume there, I was the organizer here for, you know, 7 or 8 years. And I always say that to people who come in. I say, you know, when have you ever gone through something with your contractor where they have changed the scope of your work or the type of your benefits? And it's, yeah, all the time. You know, my health care used to be 100% paid for, and now I'm paying $200 a week for less coverage. Like, okay. Yeah. And, you know, was there even a conversation on that? You know, and, you know, I get it. I understand how things happen. We face the same challenges here, and we will, you know, move our raises into health care and into pension to make sure everything is to the quality we want it to be. But at least we're at the table to have that conversation. And in the non-union, you're not. And that is just as far as your contract and things like that go. You know, the education is really where this thing is all about, right? Yeah. So when I was coming up to the trades, there was no formal education required for open shop or unrepresented electricians. You just did your time in the field, and then you took your test, and you became a journeyman wireman if you passed your test. The union at the time was running a 4-year program that your apprentices, indentured apprentices, would be in school for 4 years, 2 nights a week, 9 months a year, and then they would work in the trade during the day. And that education, by the way, 100% paid for by the members of the union. So you have no debt, no responsibility after you leave to pay back, you know, $200,000 in student loans or any of that kind of stuff. So when you get into the union now, we now have a 5-year program because, of course, technology has changed. There's a lot more things going on. So we need to, you know, keep up with the times. But in Rhode Island, the open shop schools or unrepresented schools, in most cases, don't even test their people. If you sit in the seat for the amount of time that you're supposed to be there, it doesn't matter whether you learned a thing or didn't learn a thing, you pass. And then you just have to go take your journeyman's license. And if you're lucky or you're good at tests, maybe you pass. And it's evident when guys come to us to apply that we'll have two people who are in the same class. And we'll put them in our craft certification labs where we test them on the hands-on. And then we'll do a proficiency exam to see what they've learned in theory and things like that. And we'll have one guy who will knock it out of the park. And then the other guy, you wonder how he ever even found your building. And the reason is one guy applied himself at night, YouTube and everything else, trying to figure out all the stuff he was supposed to be learning in school, and the other guy didn't. So it doesn't work that easy in the union. In the union, you're going to learn or you're not. And if you're not learning, you're out.
Well said, my man. You got it down. Joe, I have to take a break. Can you stay with us for another segment here on America's Workforce?
Sure.
Good stuff. Joe Walsh is his name. He is business manager of IBEW 99, Local 99 out of Rhode Island. Website is IBEW99.org. We'll continue talking with him later in the show. Dan Flippo will be joining us. Dan is District 9 Director for the Steelworkers. District 9, big territory. We're talking Tennessee, North and South Carolina, Florida, Mississippi, Alabama, the Virgin Islands, and the state that everybody's talking about today, Georgia. It's all coming up right here on America's Workforce. Back in a few.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
Hey, we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget, we are available on various platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. Let's go back to our live line. Rejoin Mr. Joe Walsh, business manager of IBEW Local 99 out of the great state of Rhode Island. Website is IBEW99.org. You want to talk a bit about diversity, and this is a great issue, too, because the building trades have been reaching out for many years now. I think overall in the trades, like female participation is somewhere between 2 and 4%. And there's been a number of efforts to increase that, females, minorities. And I guess you're doing it over there in Rhode Island. Joe, tell me the plan over there.
Sure. So, you know, we actively recruit apprentices every day. We advertise year-round. We take applications and test year-round, which is kind of unusual in the electrical trade. And we specifically focus on diversity. Now, that doesn't mean, when most people kind of get confused on diversity, that, you know, giving people opportunities they don't deserve or anything like that. That's not how this works. But we do encourage females and minorities to apply all the time because obviously a diverse workforce is a better workforce. And, you know, when I joined, you know, the vast majority of the local union was, you know, white, Irish, or Italian. That's pretty much the way it was and probably the way it has been for 100 years. But now, you know, we have people from nearly every country on the planet and every religious sect and everything else. And what's important about that and the reason I think that people gravitate towards labor unions, you know, first of all, they feel let down from their college education, right? They were promised things when they went into college and they found out they're saddled in debt and they can't get a job that will pay anything more than $15 an hour. But when they come to us, the pay equity is a big deal, right? It doesn't matter whether you're male or female, transgender, black, white, Latino, Christian, Muslim, Jew, doesn't matter. Everybody gets paid the same, you know? And if you know, the opportunity for advancement is equal for everyone. There is no, you know, there is certainly no ceiling on anybody who can't become a foreman. And we have females who are general foremen. We have females who are active in the local and in different positions. You know, younger people who aren't quite ready because they're still in the apprenticeships and not quite ready for offices, but they certainly hold positions in our committees and things that manage, you know, a lot of the day-to-day operations of the union. Those opportunities probably weren't really there 40 years ago, but they're here now. And it's a big deal.
How are you compared to other locals in reaching out to that community? Do you have any data on that?
No, we don't have a lot of data on that, but there's some obvious, you know, observations you can make where, you know, a lot of the what we call the basic trades, which would be, you know, people that don't necessarily require licenses for their jobs. I would never say they're less skilled because, you know, being a laborer or a carpenter or a painter is equally as skilled a job as an electrician or a steam fitter, in my opinion. But they call them the basic trades just because there's less regulations on how to, you know, master that craft. A lot of those trades tend to have a higher quantity of or higher percentage of minority participation and female participation, but we're getting closer on that every day. And what we're finding is, particularly in we just recently signed a Latino contractor, first one we've ever had, and he's got half a dozen guys with him. His wife runs the show and the office, and that works out really good. And that is opening, you know, they really didn't think much about coming to the electrical union. There was already a successful open shop, unrepresented shop, doing work every single day. I kind of had my eye on them for a couple of years. We had an aggressive organizer here who also was Latino, and we kind of put him on the case. And, you know, next thing you know, we're having a meeting. Next thing you know, the gentleman's in here with his wife. We're talking about things. And now, after 6 or 8 months now, he's doing incredibly well. Incredibly well.
That's great.
And his business is growing. So,
you know, I want to speak to that, too, because I noticed on your website, the website, again, is IBEW99.org, you have the benefits for the contractor when you speak to the IBEW. You got three things: the benefits to the contractor, which you just referenced, the benefits to the worker, you know, obviously you care about the workers, and the benefits to the customer. And and that, I guess it goes back to the union difference. I mean, all of those components are taken care of when you go union, and it's happening. It's happening in Rhode Island. The future, let's talk about that. We got a new administration 2 weeks from today, new president taking office, although some people don't want to admit that. Bottom line is we got the Build Back Better plan with Biden. In fact, we had Don Norcross on the show. You probably know him. He's one of your brothers. Yeah. Electrical workers. He's in Congress. He's making things happen in Congress. And I've been hearing all kind of good things about wind, solar, and a lot of it in your area over there on the East Coast. I can only assume that's got to be a benefit to Local 99 as far as growing your membership. What's your answer to that, Joe?
Sure. So we addressed the solar influx maybe about 7 or 8 years ago. A lot of it was flying under the radar. There were unlicensed people doing licensed electrical work. It was all unrepresented. There were really no union contractors doing it. Today, we probably control about 90% of the utility scale solar in the state of Rhode Island. It's all licensed. There's nobody anymore getting away with that kind of stuff. So it accounts for about 20% of our man hours every year, our men and women out there in the field doing solar. It's tough work. The elements are, not always easy in Rhode Island. You know, it's real hot in the summer and it's real cold in the winter. And some of the work is a little monotonous, but we anticipate, you know, with the amount of work out there projected by President Biden, President-elect Biden, if we still want to say that, and our Governor Gina Raimondo, they have these goals to get to 100% renewable, you know, within 10 years in the state of Rhode Island. And then, you know, I think we're talking 30 years nationally as President Biden's position. As a building trades member, you know, our goal is whatever you want to build, we'll build it, right? And we're not anti-power plant by any stretch of the imagination, but we're certainly do lean to the renewables, and we're going to, you know, continue to build that. And we got about 70 wind turbines that are going to go offshore. We've already done 5 offshore. The first offshore wind farm in the country was done here with Local 99 labor right off Block Island. So we're pretty excited about President-elect Biden's ideas and what he's looking to do. And I think it's going to build a better world. I don't think there's any question about that.
Good stuff. Yeah, hopefully more young people will get involved in the trades. We certainly need them, and the jobs are going to be there. No doubt about that. Good stuff. Joe, I'm going to leave it on that note. I really enjoyed talking to you. I tell you, you seem really personable. You're the kind of guy I like to sit down and have a couple of beers with, you know? Maybe that day will come. I don't know.
I can always make time for that. And when you come out to the East Coast, you get the best beer on the East Coast. So
There you go. Okay, my brother. You take care. Keep up the great work over there at Local 99, IBEW99.org for more information. A lot of good information on there. Do check that out. The benefits to the contractor, the worker, and, of course, the customer, the union difference. I always talk about that on the show. You take care. Happy New Year to you. Let's have this conversation in a couple more months, okay?
Okay, brother. I appreciate the opportunity.
You got it. Joe Walsh on our live line. Quick break. Dan Flippo is District 9 Director for the Steelworkers. He's next on America's Workforce. Back in a few.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And once again, we're back. It's America's Workforce. You can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two. Welcome to the show, Dan Flippo. Dan is District 9 Director for the United Steelworkers, USW.org is our website. And District 9 is one heck of a territory. Tennessee, North and South Carolina, Florida, Mississippi, the Virgin Islands, Alabama. Their headquarters is located in Gardendale, Alabama. And they also represent the state of Georgia. And Georgia is on everybody's mind today. How you doing, Dan?
Very, very well. And thank you for the opportunity to be with you today.
I'll tell you, this was a good one here. And I for the last couple of weeks, I felt the needle moving in the right direction. I mean, we've had a number of guests on this show, and everyone was telling me how hard they were working, the feelings that they were getting, the virtual reach out because of the pandemic. They had no choice in the matter. Phone calls. It was a well coordinated effort here. And, well, I guess we got one down, one to go as we record this show. Looks like Ossoff is going to win it. In the last report, he was about 16,000 votes ahead. Of course, there's the naysayers out there. But talk to me about the steelworkers. I mean, this was your territory. Maybe you can spell out to our listeners what you did, Dan.
Oh, absolutely. And what a lot of people don't realize, I think, because of just the demographics and perhaps the history of the South, which, as you outlined, District 9 covers the southeastern United States and the Virgin Islands. There is a lot of activism and a lot of workers here that really pitch in to help everywhere. And a lot of times, even from a split vote, conservative on some of the social issues, but very engaged on the issues as it relates to workers. Georgia, for example, as you may be aware, We had a very large organizing campaign with Kumho Tire, that is a Korean tire maker, and have won that campaign. The company has it tied up in the board now, but we've won every challenge they've made. And everybody said when we started that campaign in Georgia, it was outside of Macon, there's no way you can win against a foreign tire maker in the middle of red Georgia.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, we did that. And I think what has happened in our work in the Senate elections with both seats, and the steelworkers were very active in the Atlanta, Macon area of the state and down in Savannah and also in Augusta, shows that when you show workers a path, you show people a path, that there's hope.
Yep.
Not to say that we'll always hit the target every time, we're human, but that there is a hope and there's a light. If you'll just be engaged and have the thought process of moving things forward, you can actually do that.
Now, we're in the middle of this pandemic. That has only complicated things. Maybe you can tell us how you had to handle that. I mean, you had to do a lot of zigging and zagging here because of the pandemic. Can you speak to that, Dan?
Yes, and I love the way you use the word zigging and zagging. I think it's a very adequate explanation. And in everything we do, whether it's in negotiations, whether it's in discussions with the local unions that we represent, and by the way, we have about 327 local unions across the district, covering 436 different contracts across the district. And when you think about the 50,000 plus workers that we represent and trying to do just the daily work, when you are raised on face-to-face contact, when you're raised on face-to-face activism and having to zig and zag, as you so accurately say, during the pandemic, to find a way to make those things work, whether it's on the daily things you do with the members and the local unions, or whether it's on this campaign where you do lit drops versus door-to-door stuff, whether you do more phone calls, whether you do virtual town halls. It's just amazing how we as an organization, and frankly, not just our organization, but the members, how the members adapt to find ways to make things work, to get the work of the union done, to represent their members. And it really gives me a sense of pride in seeing the members step up and figure out how to zig and zag and still do the things that we have to do to move our thought processes forward.
Dan, all the states that you represent, they're all right-to-work states. And right off the bat, I mean, you got to work harder in these states. I'm seeing good things happen. I'm seeing organizing in Texas. There's another one. Maybe you can tell us what you're doing to make that happen. I know it's a collective action and all that, but maybe you can get into specifics here, because we're seeing, I mean, half of America has gone right to work. Hopefully that might change here if we get the PRO Act with the Biden administration. That would eliminate that kind of thing. But tell me what you're doing down there.
Well, two things. One, and to give it to you in context, and you're absolutely right, the seven states that we have in the continental United States are all right to work. And our thought process has been for many years that we have the right belief. How do we communicate that belief and make that belief become a part of each and every worker's thought process when they go into a facility that we represent, if we've already have them organized? Or how do we translate that message in a community of hope for the unorganized? And what we've called it is that it's wrong not to belong. And the thought process really comes from, okay, you're in a workplace, you're spending 8, 10, 12 hours a day, 5, 6, 7 days a week. Why would you not want a voice in that? Why would you not want the opportunity to have that voice and to have that say? And even if you disagree with the politics of the union, even if you disagree with some of the policies of the union, Mm-hmm. It's just wrong not to belong to an organization that, in the overall scope of things, has your better interest, whether it's safety and health, whether it's respect and dignity. And that's where we focused and why we've been successful in the district in organizing, whether it's internal organizing. We average 85% membership throughout the district in each of the right-to-work states. And I'm very, very proud of that. It's an everyday job. It's not just, you don't organize just when you're running an organizing campaign. You organize each and every day. And our motto down here, frankly, Dave, is every day say something good about your union. It's easy to be negative, but it's more fun to be positive. So yeah. find the positivity, increase that positivity, and in the long run, we all come out better for it. And that's really, it may sound simplistic, but it honestly is what we're doing in the district, and I found it to be successful.
Well, there's got to be a lot of positive vibes moving forward this year. I mean, you've seen a lot of damage to labor with the Trump administration. I mean, last couple of weeks, man, he turned the screws on so many things. The independent contractor rule, he did. Now, that some of this can be reversed through Biden. I mean, he lowered construction workers' wages, too, by changing some classifications. I'm sure that Biden will change all that. But it's got to be refreshing. You probably heard Biden met with Trumka, a couple other union leaders. Lonnie Stevenson from the IBEW is on his transition team. That's got to make you feel darn good, Dan. What do you think?
Oh, makes me feel real good. During a campaign, I don't know if you recall, but our international president, Tom Conway, was on a train with Biden and doing some campaign stops. And I saw some of the footage and some of the pictures from that. And I just thought, you know, it is so good to have a president that is actually listening to workers instead of sitting in a skylight apartment on Fifth Avenue talking to a CEO about how to depress wages or how to make workers pay for more of their health care or how to take away their pensions or get their divine benefit put into a 401k that can be gambled away on Wall Street. It is just so good to see a candidate at the time who is now president that's listening and listening to the workers. And it's just it's great. And we have a great opportunity and look forward to hopefully not only harnessing this opportunity, but translating it into the things that really makes workers' lives better. Because when you do that, it's going to make the communities better. Communities make a state better. And each individual state actually makes the country better. So it's just a really, really good day.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to the jobs that could be created on that Build Back Better program. I mean, there's so much opportunity, and it's needed, too. You think about the infrastructure. I mean, you come from steel. I mean, that's a big part of our infrastructure. I mean, there's so much that can be said and so much that can be done. We just have to do it. That's the bottom line. Dan, I'm going to have to run here, but I appreciate you coming on the show. Dan Flippo, District 9 Director. How long have you been District 9 Director now?
I'm actually in my third. We have four-year terms. I'm in my third term. Was an assistant to director prior to that and a staff representative prior to that. Actually worked 16 years in a chemical plant in Aberdeen, Mississippi. So I'm a son of the South, as they say.
Yeah.
But it worked really well. And the workers in this country, it's time for all of us to have the opportunity, not only to have the voice, but to help move the things forward, to make the zigging and zagging that you're talking about much easier.
Good stuff. Love talking to you, Dan. Let's have this conversation again down the road here. It's good to hear from the South. The South will rise again.
absolutely. And I appreciate the call and appreciate the opportunity and your guys being the voice.
You got it. Take care, buddy. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you.
Dan Filippo, District 9 Director for the United Steelworkers, USW.org. All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, our segment with Kellyanne Ferraro and Senator Sherrod Brown. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.